It was Marx who once said, not that one, Groucho, who once said, there's nothing like good planning, and this is nothing like good planning. Marjorie and I assumed that yesterday there could be 8 or 9 inches of snow.
Correct.
We've come close to the all-time February record, which is just over 40, but it's still really high in the top five, and especially in light of the fact that last year, what was it, last February, there was less than an inch, and with droughts and superstorms and all that sort of thing, we thought it was the time to talk about climate change, and so did Barack Obama during the State of the Union.
It's true that no single event makes a trend, but the fact is the 12 hottest years on record have all come in the last 50. Heat waves, droughts, wildfires, floods, all are now more frequent and more intense.
That is the President of the United States during the State of the Union. It is a top priority for him. And as Marjorie said a minute ago, apparently not for the American public. Fewer than a third of the American people consider it a priority. Well, to figure out who's right, we're joined by Daniel Schrag. He's a Harvard professor of geology, and he's the director of Harvard's Center for the Environment. Professor Schrag, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. You know, I am personally in a panic. I'm in that group that thinks we have to do something about this very quickly, Professor Schrag. So I just want to know, how long, for those of us who like to vacation on the Cape, before it's underwater? Is it 20 years or 50 years, or will we all be dead and it won't matter?
Well, you know, that's one of the challenges of climate change, is the long time scales.
Yeah.
I have a place in Orleans, so I love the Cape as well. And the truth is that we're already seeing impacts of climate change. Where I am in Orleans and in Chatham along Pleasant Bay there, those barrier islands are beginning to bust through. Those beaches are changing all the time. And one of the effects, I mean, some of that's happened continually over history, but some of that is certainly due to the rising sea level.
And actually, you know, there were a lot of reports, Professor, during the last week that the average erosion of the beaches is from Orleans to Provincetown is what, like a foot a year, and this year it was 15 to 20.
So what does that
after
mean?
The most recent
years?
Storm?
How long do we survive? 20 years? What do you think,
well,
Professor?
I think that there will still be people enjoying the Cape for a very long time.
Oh, good.
The question is, you know, how close you are place is to the water and whether you will be affected.
Well, there are always pylons, too. Hey, Professor Schrag, so close to two-thirds of the country was in some level of drought during the summer. We talked about snowfall here, almost a record February as opposed to last year, a whole variety of things. Is the jury still out on climate change, or is it only a couple of people on the margins who are saying that man and woman are not critical players here?
The jury's been back on climate change for a very long time. There's really been no scientific discussion, serious dispute on whether climate change is happening for decades. And, there, you know, consensus to the point where, you know, this is almost like the theory of evolution. I mean, it's not really a question of whether it's happening. The big question is exactly how much. And that's where the Earth system is complicated. It's hard to predict exactly how fast. In general, what we've seen has actually been faster than what we expected. If you take a look at the Arctic sea ice, for example, it's disappearing, and much faster than any models predicted. You know, not only is the Northwest Passage open, which Amundsen, the famous Norwegian explorer, took 3 years to get through. Now we could just sail through in a 20-foot boat. But now the Northeast Passage is open over Russia, and that was never open in all of history. And so this is really an amazing change.
If you want to talk to Professor Schrag, regardless of which jury you're on, it's 877-301-8970. I have to disagree with you, though, Professor, on one thing. There was a great piece, or a horrible piece, depending on your point of view, in the New York Times a couple of years ago, in which it said that one-third of meteorologists in this country, a pretty important segment of the science community, fewer than one-third of meteorologists believe that climate change was caused in any part by humans, and 25% of meteorologists agreed with this statement, quote, global warming is a scam. So if the jury's in, what are they missing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I actually don't know the article you're talking about. I assume what you mean is television meteorologists.
Yes.
As opposed to scientific meteorologists, and that's a very different thing. And honestly, I don't know about the education you know, various viewpoints of different TV meteorologists.
I must say, I just looked. It's George Mason, University of Texas, of television meteorologists.
Yes, television. Right. Well, but they're significant because, of course, they're communicating to the public all the time. But Professor Schrag, I wonder, though, I thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the dispute was not, for the most part, that it's happening. I think almost everybody agrees it's happening. But I thought the dispute was how much of it is cyclical and how much of it is, you know, fossil fuels and man-made.
Actually, that's really not the dispute. The truth is we know a lot about the history of climate.
Yeah.
I actually study the history of climate over hundreds of years and thousands of years and even millions of years. And the truth is that what we're seeing today is nothing like what we've experienced over millions of years.
Okay.
And it's clearly associated with the rise in carbon dioxide through the Industrial Revolution.
So what could Barack Obama, he made a big deal about this in his second term of the State of the Union speech. What could he do without Congress that would make a difference?
So it's really interesting. I should say for your viewers, for all honesty, I'm one of members of President Obama's Council on Scientific Advisors, of his Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. So I've met with the president to discuss this issue. So in my own opinion, the president understands this issue very deeply. He also realizes that he can't solve this in the next 4 years. This is something that's going to take decades, and it's going to take a global effort. But he wants to put America and the world on the right track and on the right path towards a solution. I think that's what he was talking about. As far as what he can do without Congress, the big hammer in his toolkit is the Environmental Protection Agency. You know, the Supreme Court ruled in Massachusetts versus EPA, they ruled that indeed carbon dioxide was a pollutant regulated under the Clean Air Act, and that the EPA had the authority to regulate CO2. And in the first term of the Obama administration, they put out rules for new stationary sources for power plants that limited their CO2 emissions. And the big question is, are they going to extend that to existing power plants? And if they did that, that would be a really big deal.
And by the way, our number again is 877-301-8897 if you want to talk to or debate with Professor Schrag from Harvard. But it seems to me when you see these kinds of numbers we talked about before, where it's so high on the president's agenda, maybe in part because of people like you, Professor, and so low on the public's agenda with immigration and all these fiscal nightmares and gun questions, it seems to me as a practical matter, it goes lower on the president's priority list, which means, realistically speaking, not much at all happens in the next couple of years. Is that not a fair statement?
I think that's not a fair statement.
Why is that?
I think that the president has a tough job. And I think that comparing, you know, saying that the issue of guns competes with the issue of climate change, competes with the issue of military security, competes with the issue of energy security, I think that unfortunately the president has a difficult job because he has to do all of those things at the same time. And he's committed to all of those things. I don't think it's fair to say that because he's emphasized climate change recently, therefore he's less committed to doing something about gun violence, which he's also spoken about extensively.
But it's just as an example, during his first term, even though he said the right things about gun control, as I'm sure you know, the only two things he signed into law weakened gun laws in this country, and it was only post-Newtown with the rest of the American people that he decided that it should move to the front of the list. So I think realistically there are priorities. There is an amount of energy. There's only so much energy that one man in that position can expend on so many issues. Huh?
I think that's probably, there are certainly some political trade-offs. But on the other hand, I think there's a lot more that can be done than people think. Again, many people aren't aware of what he's already done in terms of transportation and fuel efficiency. We now have new CAFE standards that are fleet-wide fuel efficiency standards for automobiles that are now set at 54.5 miles per gallon by the end of the decade. That's amazing. And nobody seems to be even aware of that.
Well, I think a lot of people aren't aware of the whole subject in general. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say things I found out about that plastic bag thing out in the middle of the ocean that's swirling around. I mean, I'm a reporter. I didn't know about that until very recently, I'm ashamed to say. But anyway, we've got some people on the phone who'd like to talk to Professor Schrag, a professor of geology at Harvard and an expert on climate change. Let's go first to Russell in Providence. Russell, thanks for calling Boston Public Radio, WGBH.
It's a pleasure to be on this afternoon.
Hey, Russell.
My comment is more about the messaging of it. I strongly believe that climate change is a problem and we need to do something, but I'm really dismayed because the general public just doesn't seem to care. So I wonder if you've thought about presenting the message more as like anti-pollution or healthy. There's all sorts of reasons going green would help America, whether it's not spending money on countries that don't like us in the Middle East to getting rid of smog and pollution. I don't know if you guys have seen the photos of the smog over Salt Lake City in Utah. I know California has a problem with it. Could we present clean energy is more of a, this is just healthy and good for America, and eventually it'll help climate change, whether you believe in it or not.
Russell,
you
know, that's a great question, the messaging.
You know, Professor, I was thinking when I was a little girl, that great public service announcement when it had the Native American with the tear down his eye looking at all the pollution in the lakes and streams and stuff. You may not be old enough to remember that. But
I
it was,
remember that well. I was a kid in New York City at the time.
Exactly. It was so effective. So who can do this? I mean, Al Gore scared a lot of us to death. He scared me. But there's no one doing the PR of this effectively, I don't think.
Well, the problem is that certainly it's become associated with the far left wing or the environmental extremists, and, you know, as opposed to just good for people. And I think was it Russell, the caller?
Yes.
Russell,
that was a very, very thoughtful comment. And I think many of us have advocated exactly that approach, which is to say that there are many times where dealing with climate change is actually good for things like health. Air pollution is one of the absolute worst things for public health. The Clean Air Act has saved more money in terms of its health impact than any other piece of legislation that we've passed in terms of government regulations. It's been incredibly important. People aren't aware of just how bad air pollution is for you. You know, there was a famous study in Salt Lake City back in the 80s that showed when a single steel mill shut down that was burning coal because of a strike, the workers went on strike, the number of cases of asthma in kids dropped by over 50%.
Wow. Hey,
Professor Schreck, one last question for me, if I can. It's actually via Twitter to us. What's the president going to ultimately do on this Keystone Pipeline? I mean, ironically or oddly, he's got a lot of his traditional allies, unions, for example, that have been very strongly with the president, lobbying him to say yes, and their environmentalists are chaining themselves to the White House fences, saying a big-time no. What is he going to do, and what should he do?
So I don't know what he's going to do, and
have you advised him about
information.
It?
I have not personally advised the president on this, on the Keystone XL pipeline. I have an opinion. I've got to tell you, I have friends on both sides, and I hear their arguments, and there are good arguments on both sides. To me, the best argument against the pipeline is to say, you know, we have to limit the development of and the investment of money by the oil industry in the oil sands up in Alberta because they are very dirty. At the same time, I think we have to understand that dealing with climate change is really going to be a many-decade war. This is not going to be a short battle. This isn't like a single piece of legislation that's going to solve the problem. This is a global problem. It involves a fundamental change in our energy system that it took us the better part of 150 years to build, and it's not going to go away in the next decade. It's going to be something we're going to be dealing with for many decades into the future. And given that, we have to think about strategically what is the right battle to fight and what are the right fronts to open up. And I actually think that right now, my own view is that the Keystone Pipeline should be approved, even though it is a little bit dirtier than our average oil that we get, because it is good for our economy. And ultimately, we need the American economy to thrive, to innovate, to ultimately make clean energy cheaper and better so that we can actually solve this problem.
Professor Schreck, thanks so much for your time.
And yeah, thank you.
Professor, I hope your place at, in Orleans lasts until you're a ripe old age.
I think it will. We're about 50 feet above sea level. So
okay.
We got
that's because she hopes that her place
that's
down
right.
the Cape
that is correct.
Also survives for 50.
Have a great day, guys.
Thank you
so
very
much.
And thank you for joining us. Up next, it's Open Mic with Dorchester Reverend Eugene F. Rivers III. We're going to talk Oscars, politics, and guns. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. He's Jim Browdy. This is 89.7 WGBH.